Welcome back to this edition of the Golf Digest podcast. I'm Alex Myers, and today I'm joined by recently retired NFL player Josh Scobie. Josh also happens to be the number one ranked pro athlete golfer in Golf Digest's most recent ranking of pro athlete golfers. He checked in at number one on the list with a plus 2.5 handicap, so this guy can really play. You may also remember the name because at one point he called out Tiger Woods on Twitter, asked him to play in a match, although we end up discussing that. Josh explains his side of the story. Obviously, he was joking about that. We also talked about his time in the NFL, the pressures of being a kicker in the league, and his aspirations going forward, both in golf and in the rest of his life. So anyway, please have a listen to our interview with Josh Scobie. Welcome back to the Golf Digest podcast. I'm Alex Myers, and today I am joined by recently retired NFL player Josh Scobie. Josh, thanks so much for joining us today.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So let's talk about this retirement. You did one of these one-day signings with your original team, the Jacksonville Jaguars, where you played, I know, like 99% of your career games with, and you retired. How did that come about, and how special of a day was that for you?
Well, it came about because I reached out to the Jaguars myself, and my agent reached out to them to see what they would be interested in doing once I retired. And they suggested doing a one-day contract and retire as a Jaguar. And then now we're going to start talking about things in the future, about getting involved more with the team on day-to-day things and just being a Jaguar for life, basically.
That's great. Obviously, team's leading scorer. You all-time, you've been there for so many years. I guess, you know, how hard was it when you actually did get traded away? Because you'd spent so much time, obviously, in Jacksonville with the same team.
Yeah, it was tough. I mean, anytime you're in a situation, no matter what it is, it's sports or any work environment, if you're in one situation for a long time and all of a sudden one day that changes out of the blue, it's going to be tough. And the emotions that come with it are mixed. I mean, you have a lot of questions and logistical concerns. Obviously I'm married with kids, so you think about a lot of things and, you know, try to be positive about it as much as you can, but it was a tough situation.
Now, obviously we followed you because you're such a great golfer, and we kind of thought that, man, going to Pittsburgh's a great golf city, don't get me wrong, but not during the fall and winter. We thought maybe that would kind of hurt your golf game as well. Did that ever cross your mind?
It did, but, you know, at the same time, obviously, like you said, it's a great golf town.
Yeah.
I mean, with Oakmont right next door and a lot of really nice courses, completely different courses than I'm used to in Northeast Florida. So I was excited about that. I mean, I brought my clubs with me the next day that I got traded. Unfortunately, I never got a chance to play in those fall and winter months because I was there for such a short time. But I was pumped about getting the chance to play Oakmont since the Open was there last year.
You've never gotten to play Oakmont?
No, I didn't. I was planning on playing it a few days after I got released, and that happened. So it was unfortunate. I had some friends that had come in town for my last game there. We were going to play a couple days after, but things worked out a little differently.
Yeah. Well, where do you play now? Do you have like a few courses? Do you have, what's your setup there? And how often are you playing now that you are officially retired?
I live in Deerwood Country Club. It's right in the middle of Jacksonville. And I'm a member also at San Jose Country Club, which is a little closer to the St. John's River, a little farther west. But, I mean, the beauty of being in Northeast Florida and in Jacksonville in particular is how many amazing courses there are in such a small radius. And, you know, obviously with TPC Sawgrass here. Yeah. It's amazing to have that course so close and accessible, and I mean that I wouldn't even put that course as one of my favorites because there's so many great ones. Not that it isn't great, but sure. There's so many great courses here.
What
and I'm probably playing, you know, 3 or 4 times a week right now.
Okay, yeah. Now, how often when you were still in season playing, did you get to play golf a week?
Typically once a week, because we had our one day off, which was for most teams is Tuesday. Mm-hmm. So I would get out on Tuesdays if I could, if I didn't have anything else going on those days, whether, you know, kids activities or charity events and whatnot. Mm-hmm. I would get out on Tuesdays and get out to the range every now and then. And the good thing is I have a golf simulator in my house, so
nice.
Can play whenever I want.
So what's your handicap at right now?
It's scratch. I try to keep it right at 0.
Okay.
I manipulate that a bit for my member events.
Uh-huh.
I got sick of playing against these guys at a +3.
Right.
So I decided to rearrange it and make it about a 0.1 little sandbag job now.
Okay.
I got sick of playing against 13, 14 handicappers and giving them a shot a hole. So
right.
I decided to give myself a little more fighting chance.
So in Golf Digest last pro athlete ranking, you came in number one. I think we had you at a +2.5 at the time. So you hadn't started your manipulation, I guess, yet.
Exactly. But, it was actually, that was wrong, actually. I was +3.5 at the
time. Whoa, 3.5. Wow, okay.
But that's okay. I won't be angry.
Yeah. No, so clearly then you were easily number one then. I wondered, so you knew about the ranking at the time, and like, what did you make of the fact that you were number one?
Well, at the time, whenever I found out about when that article came out, mm-hmm. I was on the golf course playing with a couple regular golf buddies of mine, and we're making the turn, and one of the guys working at the course brought out the magazine article and showed it to me, and I mean, I was a little blown away, and obviously I take golf very seriously, and I thought it was amazing, and the guys that I was playing with just were rolling their eyes and like, oh, here we go. So I proceeded to shoot like 5 under that day against them, and just to prove them that ranking was true.
What do you take more pride in, that number one ranking or, you know, kicking a game-winning field goal?
I'd say the golf. I mean, with kicking, you know, I did it for so long,
sure.
And you know, I was one of the 32 players in the world at any given point to mm-hmm. do that. 32 mm-hmm. best in the world.
Right.
So you know, to be able to get to the top of a celebrity ranking in a different sport was pretty special to me. So I was pretty proud of that because the golf. Takes a whole lot more hard work than kicking a ball does.
Now I know a couple other football players were in the top 5, Matt Ryan and Derek Anderson, so 2 quarterbacks. Have you ever A, played with those guys, or B, played with any other NFL players that could beat you straight up?
I've never played with either one of those guys. Mm-hmm. I played in tournaments where both of them were there, but
okay.
I've never played with them,
right.
But I mean, I played with a lot of good NFL players,
mm-hmm.
and quarterbacks and kickers and punters are the
mm-hmm.
3 best positions that translates really well
mm-hmm.
to golf, because you know, so much of the mechanics and mentality are the same, and also, you know, as a kicker and punter, you get a lot of free time. Quarterbacks not so much, but these guys are just, you know, gifted.
Right.
You know, more than most athletes that golf game can translate to that. So, I mean, I've played with, I mean, Jay Feely.
Okay.
He's a really good golfer. I think he's scratch.
Mm-hmm.
Brett Kern, who's the Tennessee Titans punter, scratch.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, Ryan Suckup,
mm-hmm.
Titans kicker, is scratch. I mean, I've played with all these guys, and they are solid players. Now, none of them ever beat me, but they were still really solid players. And, you know, there's a ton of really good golfers that play in the NFL that I didn't see on that list, at least the last Golf Digest list that came out.
Yeah.
Who knows if they don't carry a handicap
right.
or whatever, but they're still really good golfers.
Yeah. So, okay. So a lot of good golfers in the NFL, but you're undefeated against your fellow NFL guys. We'll just say that.
I don't think I could say that any one of them has ever beaten me
wow.
in a straight up head to head match.
So I guess who would you nominate now that you're retired? Who would you nominate of the active guys to kind of take that crown as the top guy?
I would say Ryan Suckup.
Okay.
He's got a tour quality swing. Mine
mm-hmm.
isn't exactly the most tour quality.
Okay.
I mean, mechanics aren't the best, even though I work on them a lot. But his mechanics are amazing. Just a beautiful golf swing, great tempo. And, I mean, he can crush the ball.
Mm.
And, I mean, he's tour long. By tour standards, he would be, you know, above average guy.
Wow.
So I would, in my opinion, he would probably be the best active NFL golfer right now. Now, there's some quarterbacks, like you said, that are really good, but
mm-hmm.
I've never played with them.
Right.
So you got to give them credit, too, because I've seen the things they've done in the celebrity events.
Mm-hmm. Now, you've played in some of the celebrity events. I saw, have you played? You've played in Tahoe, right? You had a high finish.
Yes,
there.
Twice. Yep.
Okay. So is that kind of, you know, now that you're retired, is that a way to keep the competitive juices flowing? And are you entered in any more events this year?
Those events are a blast. I mean, number one, it's fun just to keep the competitive juices flowing and
mm-hmm.
To be able to compete with current and former athletes is a whole lot of fun. And that Tahoe tournament is such a great avenue for that, and it gets such great publicity because it runs coincides with the Open Championship. So.
Sure.
That's something that hopefully I can get into. Now, it's hard to get into that. You have to be, you know, a top of the top type of celebrity. So
mm-hmm.
I'm hoping I get in that one this year. I haven't been invited yet, so we'll see. But there's another one that it's kind of a lot of the same celebrities that play in it that's coming up next month in San Diego that Marshall Faulk hosts. It's
okay.
called the Celebrity Championship, and I've played in that for the past probably 7 or 8 years, and it's a lot of the same field, and just a you know a smaller purse and a little bit smaller atmosphere than Tahoe is.
Have you played with? I'm sure you have any tour pros in your travels.
Yes, I mean with since you know living in Jacksonville, there's
right
a lot of tour players that live here, and with the you know the tour being here with TPC Sawgrass. A lot of guys do live here, so I get a chance to play with those guys pretty often, and you know it's fun to compare your game to these guys and see just how much better they are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, obviously, a lot of people, casual golfers, think once you get to a scratch, that's kind of like the pinnacle. But you got to a +3.5, and you're even saying when you play with a tour pro, it's a distinct difference.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I always equate it to, you know, people say, well, now that you're, you know, done playing football, you should, you know, go to the PGA Tour.
Right.
And I try to explain to them that that's like saying to a high school football player, you should go to the NFL
mm-hmm.
right now.
Mm-hmm.
There's a huge difference. I mean,
right.
if you were to actually input these tour players' scores with a course rating and slope and the scores that they're shooting, most of these guys are going to be a +7, +8.
Right.
And I remember, you know, reading something about when Tiger was struggling a couple of years ago, and you know, people were, you know, he's throwing up 80s and 78, 79s, and his handicap was still going to be like a +3.
Mm-hmm.
So there's just a huge difference. I mean, I get to play with a lot of these guys that are struggling pros that you know are trying to keep their card every year.
Right.
And I'm still asking for 3 shots from them, and
mm-hmm.
most of the time still losing. So I know the difference is there. And, you know, it would take my best day and an average day for me to beat them.
Right. Are there any guys in particular that you play with on a regular basis? Any tour pros, anything like that?
Yeah, some of my good friends that live here in Jacksonville are Steve Wheatcroft.
Okay.
He's, well, you know, one of the guys I'm talking about that, you know, year to year, it's a grind. And, and you know, he's one of the, I got to caddy for him last year in the last round of the Players' Championship.
Oh,
which
cool.
Was blast. And Sam Saunders moved here about a year ago.
Uh-huh.
So he and I played quite a bit in the past year, and he and Steve are very close, so that's how we know each other.
Mm-hmm.
Jonas Blix lives here, David Lingmerth, Jim Furyk play with quite a few times. I mean, there's a lot of guys that are around this area and out towards Ponte Vedra that we get to play quite a bit. And we actually started a game this past winter here at my home course at Deerwood with, we basically call it a pro-am. We get three pros and one amateur, and we did it weekly and play at two best balls out of four. And we were getting a lot of mini tour guys, a lot of web.com and some PGA guys mixed throughout it. And that turned into a really competitive, fun game.
Wow. Yeah, you brought up Tiger Woods. Obviously, we know you were kidding, but there was a thing a couple years ago. You took some heat on Twitter. You challenged him to a match when he was struggling. I just, you know, did people totally misread that situation from you?
Oh, yeah. But, I mean, I also have to, you know, own up to it because, at the time, I should have thought about it a little better. Just about how it came across, because I never wanted to step on his toes or make it seem like I was kicking him while he was down, because I'm, number one, a huge Tiger Woods fan, like most everyone is.
Sure.
So, you know, looking back on it, I wish I had either worded it better or immediately said I was joking at the end of it. But the joke of it really was me giving him two shots of stock.
That would
be the joke.
Yeah.
But it ended up being a little bit in poor taste. And I mean, like any Tiger Woods fan, we're all hoping that he gets healthy enough to be able to compete.
Sure.
And when he does, that, you know, he gets some good form to him and can make cuts and get in contention, because there's nothing like a Thursday morning knowing that Tiger's going to be playing that day and that you can turn on the TV later and watch him play, because without him, you know, golf's missing something.
Sure. Well, also, I think you said $100,000 per hole. I think that probably should have tipped people off that there was a joke, too, because...
Exactly.
I don't know, unless...
You know, most of my Twitter followers would agree that or understand that was a joke.
Yeah.
And with 90% of my tweets are you know, sarcastic.
Right.
I'm trying to joke around and have fun. So that one just happened to be when I was standing in line at Chick-fil-A ordering, getting some food for my kids, and all of a sudden I thought of this funny tweet. I tweeted it, put the phone back in my pocket, didn't even think anything of it, and got back home, took my phone out, and started looking at the replies and going, oh no, like, oh crap. That was just one of those social media moments that I'm sure a lot of people had that they wish they could have done it a little bit differently.
Sure. What is a typical Josh Scobie wager on a golf course? Or do you know, when you play with a friend, you play with your buddies on the tour or whatever, do you guys play a game or not?
Yeah, we always play a game. I mean, with friends, you really don't want to just take all their money, and you don't want them to take all your money.
Right.
So, I mean, our normal bet with most guys is like a $20 Nassau, or, you know, 20 aside and 20 for the overall. So it never gets out of hand because, like I said, we're friends. But, you know, we do get the occasional match where a friend of mine and I will – we'll play two other guys and we'll play like $100 a hole or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the most I think I've ever played for. But you know, it, like I said, we're not trying to bankrupt any of our friends.
Right. How did you get into golf? And what age were you when you got into golf?
So when I got drafted here in 2004 in Jacksonville, and I'd played golf maybe once a year growing up. I never had clubs. but always knew that I wanted to play golf. And golf is a pretty expensive game,
sure.
Especially if you want nice equipment and play a decent course and practice. It's just expensive. So golf clubs are actually the first thing that I bought whenever I got my first check in 2004. And so I started playing as a rookie, and my goal back then was to break 100. So I was trying to have a bogey, average a bogey or double bogey every hole, and I figured I could break 100. And then the next year got to trying to average a bogey a hole, and, you know, probably 5 shots a year I was cutting off. And about into my 5th or 6th year, I started taking lessons from a friend of mine, a teaching pro, mm-hmm. and he got me from about a 7 down to scratch.
Wow.
And ever since then, now I'm just trying to break par every round.
Wow. Yeah. So you taught yourself, but then you did have to take some lessons, to get level. Yeah.
Yes. I like to teach myself and learn on the course, mm-hmm. play by myself a lot and hit multiple shots and, you know, learn on your own, because it's, most of the time you're your own best teacher, but there's times when we all need, correction and help from a different observation, and that's why teaching pros are so great. And now I've been working with the same guy for the past 3 or 4 years now, mm. out at TPC Sawgrass, and I mean he's helped me with multiple things, not just the mechanics of the swing, the how to score, the right times to go for certain shots, when to lay up, that type of thing.
So, okay, so you were kind of a late bloomer into golf. I would have thought you played more as a kid. You're such an accomplished player. But also I read you were kind of, by luck, you got into football. Could you tell that story? You were kind of just seen kicking the ball around somewhere?
Yep, so I grew up playing everything but football and golf,
wow.
basically. I was a soccer player starting at 4 years old and played all the way through high school, and also played baseball in high school. And, you know, I was most likely going to go on and play soccer in college somewhere, and until a couple weeks before my senior year of high school. A friend of mine and I were on our high school practice football field, and we just liked to kick footballs because we would play pickup games on Sunday afternoons, and I would always be the one to kick the ball because I could kick it really far. And we happened to be on the practice field one day while the practice was about to get started, our 2-a-days for our high school team, and the head coach came over and saw us kicking and asked to see a little more, and we were, at that time we're not trying to kick 30-yard field goals, we just go back as far as we could.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I was kicking probably 55 yarders or something like that, and so he asked me what grade I was in, and told him I was going into my senior year, and he asked me if I'd like to play, and I said, I asked him when tryouts were, and he said I didn't have to try out, that if I wanted to play, that I was going to be the kicker.
Wow.
So, I mean, it was literally 2 weeks before the start of the season, and then about 3-4 weeks into the season, I got a scholarship offer from Louisiana Tech.
Wow, that is quite a quick turnaround there. That's amazing. Had you liked football? I mean, you didn't play it, but did you like watching it at the time, or were you not even into football? Okay, you were into football.
Yeah, I loved football. I mean, our high school team was one of the best in the state, mm-hmm. and well known for football. And I mean, Texas high school football is huge, and
yep.
I mean, our stadium was gigantic, and we loved the Friday night lights and
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and all that atmosphere. And I'd travel to games and watch them, but I never thought about playing because, honestly, I didn't even hit a growth spurt until about my junior year in high school. I was always, 5'6", 5'7", and mm-hmm. skinny and fast, and then all of a sudden I hit a growth spurt and went to 6'1", and luckily that's when football came along.
Now, a lot of people always wonder, and I'm really curious about this, the dynamic in the locker room with the kicker and the rest of the team, and how, a game can come down to just you. How does that How does that work with the guys? I mean, you know, sometimes people say kickers don't even feel like they're part of it. I think that's ridiculous, obviously. But how is it to be the kicker on the team?
It just all depends on the personality of the kicker. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're a regular guy and you can interact with different types of people, then you're going to get along fine with everyone in the locker room. And I always like to be that type of guy that could get along with everyone. And I also like to talk a little trash to everyone, just, you know, to the big guys, you know, jokingly talk trash to them. And it always seemed to help me out in terms of and not being the kicker in the locker room.
Instead
I just was another guy. And it also helps to be able to perform your job well, because then you get even more respect from them whenever you come around and talk trash.
Sure. Now, I saw for your career, you ended up just over 80% field goal makes. Is that a number that, like in baseball, the 300 batting average, is that a number that kickers think about?
Yeah, 80% is kind of the barometer. Mm-hmm. So if you can get to that point, that's great. The field goal percentages now are going up at a pretty steady rate.
Right.
And now I think it's probably around 85. If you're 85% for your career, that's really good. And then there's a few guys, maybe only one or two, that are right at 90%. Mm-hmm. And they're young guys, obviously.
Right.
But I'm, you know, proud of where my number ended up, because early on in my career, I was known for having a really strong leg, but not as accurate. So mm-hmm. I had to work on my accuracy, and I had a few years in the 90% range, which helped it out. And, you know, unfortunately, the end of my career didn't exactly finish the way I wanted it. But, you know, you can't always control everything in sports.
Why are the accuracy numbers going up? I mean, it's kind of like the quarterback numbers, the passing numbers have exploded recently. But why would kickers be making a higher percentage now? They're just that much better?
Yeah, I mean, these guys are getting trained mm-hmm. from a young age now. There are kicking coaches. There are camps to go to.
Mm-hmm.
There's multiple resources for these kids to learn. And also, the internet is helping with that. I mean, they can go on watching instructional videos. We just didn't have the access to that whenever I was growing up and even in high school and college. We just didn't have access to these types of coaches. And so these kids are getting trained at a young age and being developed physically and mentally to be ready in much younger ages.
What's it like when you're on a team for so long, and when you were drafted? You guys were a really good team still, obviously. You made the playoffs a couple times early in your career. Then you had some lean years, obviously, the Jags did. It just seems like football would be the toughest sport to be on a not very good team, because you put in so much work for that one game and then you lose. What is it like to go through those down spells?
Yeah, it's not easy, because, like you said, the first, you know, 3 or 4 years of my career, we were successful and, mm-hmm. you know, playoff contender, went to the playoffs a couple times, and after that just has not been the same. And you know, they always say that football is a team game, but at the end of the day, you have to make sure that as an individual you're doing your job, and you can't be the reason why a game is lost.
Right.
And I mean, I think that's why I had longevity here in Jacksonville, was because I was typically a bright spot in a lot of the bad seasons or bad games. And I was reliable for that. And that's just the way it is. I mean, if a team is playing poorly, I mean, they're going to be looking for the bright spots, and they're going to be looking for the weaknesses to get rid of. And I just try not to be one of the weaknesses.
What's it like when the game comes down to you? Well, I mean, what are you going through? What is that like when the whole game comes down to your field goal attempt?
Well, it's something that every kicker should wish for, because, mm-hmm. I mean, why else would you want to do it other than to have the recognition and and everything that comes with it for being the reason the team won the game? So most kickers have that dream, you know, of hitting a game-winning field goal at the end of the game. So if you haven't had that dream, then something's wrong with you. But it's an amazing feeling to have it come down to you at the end of the game where you're the last play or one of the last plays that's going to be the deciding factor. And whenever you do make the kick, there's nothing better because the hard work that you put in is finally getting paid off with a win and not just a made kick.
Sure. How much does the mental side affect you if you do miss a big kick? And because you see guys go from being great kickers to maybe being out of the league like in a couple years later. I mean, how can it really get in your head?
Like me.
No. Well, you had a long career.
Yeah,
I mean, there's some
mean.
Guys who yep. only do. Yeah, you're right. I mean, right. A couple years ago, you were still on, but yeah. Is there something where you get in a rut negatively and you just can't pull yourself out of it?
Yeah, that is very true. And I also equate golf to the same comparison because it really just takes one good kick or one good swing or a made putt to boost your confidence. I mean, your mechanics are pretty much going to stay the same. So trying to change too many things can mess you up even more. And it really just takes one good thing to happen to boost your confidence back up. And all of a sudden you start swinging freely, whether that's on the golf course or on the football field, and all of a sudden good things start happening.
What do you think of when the coach calls that last second timeout right before the play, you know, to try to freeze the kicker?
Yep.
What do you think about that?
Well, I mean, it's never been a negative for me. Mm-hmm. Some people assume, or I've gotten the question a lot, where people say, "Oh, well, you know, you knew they were going to call a timeout." But if you assume that they're going to call a timeout to try and ice you, then that means you're not mentally or physically prepared for that kick. If they don't call it, then you're just not mentally ready.
Right,
so
right.
You have to assume that you're going to be kicking mm-hmm. each one and not try to pretend that they're going to call a timeout. But all it does really for the mentally weak people or mentally weak kickers, that it might expose you. But for the mentally strong ones, it just gives you a little more time to assess the situation and, you know, maybe possibly, you know, give you more time to go through a little pre-shot routine and prepare yourself.
What's the most, if you remember, the most nervous game situation you were ever in?
Huh, that's a good question. It was probably my rookie year. We played at Indianapolis my rookie year, maybe 5 or 6 games in. I had a 53-yard game-winning field goal, and I think it was under maybe like 40 seconds left. Mm. And I remember, I mean, at that point, I hadn't had a long kick. It was my first long attempt of the season.
Mm-hmm.
I hadn't had a game-winning field goal opportunity, and the crowd was so loud that I could feel my face mask and helmet just rattling. And I remember being really nervous, and all of a sudden, I just started thinking about the dreams that I had of kicking a long field goal to win the game. And the smile just came across my face. And all of a sudden the nerves were gone and I drilled it and we won the game. So, you know, in nervous situations like that, it's, if you can control your thoughts and your heart rate, then you can control the situation.
And what about on the golf course in a pressurized situation? I assume those situations, being on the road in a hostile environment, have to help you when you're facing a 5-footer for par.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's the big difference is the amount of noise. Like,
yeah.
You know, the lack of noise, I should say, on the golf course. I mean, yeah, you know, with how little golf I played growing up, my tournament experience really wasn't there. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, the few times that I've gotten in contention in bigger tournaments that I haven't won, I've kind of gotten ahead of myself and played a little too fast. And you know, luckily I've learned from those situations, but it's crazy the difference in football and golf because, you know, I'll be playing a casual round of golf and, you know, some distraction will happen somewhere while I'm swinging and I won't even notice it. And then after the swing, someone will ask me if I heard that. And I don't hear stuff like that
because
I'm, I'm used to noise. I'm used to, you know, guys on the other team yelling something at you, someone in the crowd on the sideline yelling something at you. And it's just, you basically have to pretend that you can't hear them.
What, I got to ask you, who would be in your dream foursome?
Dream foursome. Number one would be Tiger.
Okay, there you go.
Number two would be Ricky Fowler.
Okay.
And then I would have my brother with me.
Okay. And finally,
I'd have to involve someone that was not a celebrity so they could join us and enjoy it like I was.
Right, right. And finally, just, you know, you talked about how much better the guys on the PGA Tour is. It's a different ball game. But, you know, you're 34, right?
Yeah.
You've had to been asked the question, you have 16 years before you turn 50. I mean, would there be any chance that if you really dedicated yourself that maybe you play on the senior tour?
Oh, yeah. I got, like you said, I have 16 years to practice. So why not, you know, make it worthwhile and see what happens? Obviously, that's a long time from now. And in the meantime, I'm going to, you know, play in some tournaments and do U.S. Open qualifying and see where that goes. But I don't have any aspirations of trying to go to Q school or anything like that. But, you know, like I said, I'll do some Monday qualifiers and whatnot and other qualifiers and see what happens.
Cool. Great. Well, Josh, thanks so much. I don't want to keep you anymore from the golf. Got to get back out there. And just congratulations on a great career. I just turned 35, and I you know, I'd like to retire too. So I bow down to yours.
I'm gonna find something else to do now.
Okay. Yeah. Well, good luck with the Jaguars and whatever position you end up taking there, and good luck with your golf. And thanks again for joining us. Really appreciate the time.
No, thank you.
Thanks again to Josh Scobie for joining us, and thank you for listening. Please subscribe to us on iTunes if you haven't done so already, and check back next week to see who our guest is.